On today's College Football Inquirer, the NFL draft is tonight. The buzz, minimal, because there's not a lot of quarterbacks everybody's excited about. So let's talk about next year's draft and this year's college football season. What quarterbacks are we going to be buzzing about this time next year? Plus, Greg Sankey is now the guy in the Game of Thrones meme when it comes to the college football playoff with the armies coming at him. What happened? Ross Dellinger will explain. All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples, and it is draft day. It is the day that Kevin Costner made all those bad trades in that bad movie.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. I'm so glad you brought that up to start the show, Andy. It's so bad.
But it's still the Browns' best draft in years.
I had to cover the Super Bowl that year for SB Nation. I was the on-site, like, the guy who was writing the long feature from the Super Bowl. It was Seahawks and Broncos in New York City. And Andy, at Media Day for the Super Bowl, which you guys know how crazy that is, there were people physically grabbing you if you had a media credential and pulling you into like a ballroom space. And you're like, oh, maybe Goodell's going to talk. Maybe this is a press. It was a screening of draft day. And people were physically trying to escape these people. That's how bad none of us wanted to watch the movie. I have hate watched it two or three times in hotels. It holds up as one of the best worst movies of that generation. Do you know who directed that movie?
No.
Ivan Reitman.
Wow.
Dude,
Ghostbusters
Ivan Reitman.
Drafted.
Yes.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Like a legendary Hollywood director. And he puts out one of like just an absolute inexplicably bad film. Anyways, we could do a whole thing on draft day if you want.
Well, here's the thing, guys. It is draft day. First round is tonight. Not a ton of buzz other than what are NFL teams going to do trading with one another. But yeah. We tend to
and
only
why the
get
Patriots
excited.
Coach won't be there for day three.
For day three, right?
There's a little buzz.
He's
got
to go to whatever
what
kind of rehab
day
counseling.
Three, by the way, yeah. What does that say about day three of the draft? That they're not waiting for Monday. You can't wait one more day or two more days, whatever.
I want the day three draft pick from New England to be asked about that. Like, how do you feel about your quality? Considering coach was like, "Hey, simulate."
I can't
this
wait
to the
one
end,
day. Totally yeah.
Well, and day three is where most of the quarterbacks are going to get picked in this draft because there's going to be one and
can't
possibly
wait.
Two tonight. Mm. We know Fernando Mendoza is going number one to the Raiders. We think Ty Simpson is going to be a first round pick, but that is actually one of the enduring questions that will get answered tonight because there's a chance that he gets picked right off the bat on Friday, which is a very different situation and probably not one he would have left college for. I think he's trying to get into Thursday night. This is not a buzzy quarterback class, and it feels like we only get excited when that happens. Like a few years ago when you had five QBs go in the top 12, and it turns out most of them have been pretty good.
I want to steal a line, Andy, from my Phantom Island co-host, Ryan Nanny. This is a development draft. This is a remember a guy 5 years from now draft. There are going to be a lot of linemen. Right? We talked about this on Tuesday's show. There's going to be a lot of investment projects. This is a little bit like, hey, happy birthday, honey. We fixed the dehumidifier in the basement. Not the sexiest present, but it's going to pay off over the years.
Yeah, huge
right?
run on offensive tackles coming in the first round. Which
really, when you think basement dehumidifier, you think guard. A couple things I don't want to get into. We've already discussed why there's sort of a paucity of top tier quarterback talent this draft. We're not going to blame NIL. We're not going to do any of that.
It's not blaming NIL. It's the reason. It's okay.
It's a minor factor in the case of a Dante Moore, but in reality, we talked about this on Tuesday, Ross, while you were out. If you had a Cade Klubnik right now, that had a more successful career, and you had a Drew Aller that had a more successful career, we would be doing the classic thing, which is debating X versus Y quarterback, which Ty Simpson versus Mendoza is not carrying that water. It doesn't provide the weight that we need.
Can I present to you an alternate reality that could be reality next year?
Okay.
Arch Manning coming off leading Texas to the college football playoff. CJ Carr. Maybe coming off leading Notre Dame to a national title. Julian Sain, after another appearance in New York as a Heisman Trophy finalist. Dante Moore, after putting off the draft for a year, comes back. Are we getting sexier now? We getting sexy?
Andy, it's a good point. Like, we're going to see maybe this is too small of a sample size of players electing to stay and it having this horrible impact. And maybe in later years, like you just mentioned, we're going to see players who did stay, right, become way more valuable draft picks in the future and be way more NFL ready to start on day one.
Yeah, I think that you've heard the NFL people complain, oh, these guys are so old now.
Yeah.
Especially with quarterbacks, like if you get a good rookie contract out of a guy, it's a successful draft pick. You successfully use your first round draft pick. You get second contract, great. But so I don't really care if the guy is 23 or 24 when he comes into the NFL. That doesn't bother me and shouldn't bother them because, shoot, you're probably going to get fired before that person's first contract's over anyway. But but think about the names I just mentioned. And I didn't, there are a bunch of people I didn't mention. And I imagine, let me give you another set of names. And I will bet that there's a first rounder in this set of names that I'm about to mention.
Okay.
Ole Miss quarterback Trinidad Chambliss.
Yes.
New Texas Tech quarterback Brendan Sorsby. New Indiana quarterback Josh Hoover. Lenora Sellers at South Carolina. Sam Levitt at LSU.
There's that young man that the University of Southern California.
Jaden Maiava, who actually had to make the decision this year whether he wanted to go out or come back. Yes. So there's a lot of guys. But here's the part that I'm concerned about, guys, because I feel like we said this last year. When Cade Klubnik and Drew Aller get there.
Yeah. This is two things can be true, Andy. 27's class is going to be deeper. It's going to be more interesting, and you're going to get a more casual news hook, as we say here in the biz, because you have the last name Manning, because you're going to have an Ohio State quarterback, a Notre Dame quarterback, a Southern California quarterback. You're going to have big branded helmet names coming out of college football. It's going to be very easy to talk about all this stuff at the combine. And yet, of this list of sort of 10 or so quarterbacks that you just rattled off, Andy, two are going to absolutely eat the curb this fall. And when I say eat the curb, I don't even mean their team's going to have a losing record. It just means that they're going to fail to live up to a Heisman first round NFL caliber level of expectation.
If Lenore Sellers had lived up to his preseason hype last year, he would be in the draft right now. He would be a top 10 pick right now.
Yes. And maybe there's a case for NIL there where even if he hadn't, he would have just sort of forced himself into the pro ranks to try and make some money, but he doesn't have to do that. He can return for another season at South Carolina. Shout out to Eric DaCosta. He's the GM of the Ravens. I posted this in our group chat. Boy, a lot of big feelings out here in the NFL about what's going on in college, boys. DaCosta told the media that in the previous drafts, he said, quote, we might have had 4% of our players on the draft board at 24 and a half years or older prior to 2024. And now that number is up to 18%. Andy,
adjust your actuarial tables, NFL guys.
We talked about this on Tuesday. The NFL has a decades-long history of shirking any responsibility for its development league, and now that said development league is compensating a portion of players who are allowed to make some money, that's not college's problem. It's if the NFL is going to throw a fit, then the NFL can start working on a D-league.
I don't think they want to do that.
No, they don't at all. You want to know a dirty secret about every minor league in major North American sports? They're expensive. They all lose money. They're all a huge headache. Yeah. Yes, they're a huge headache for the managerial class. So the NFL would be wise to probably just shut up and adjust to the reality of college football.
What's the big complaint? Too old?
They're too old.
Tread on the tire, Ross.
Too old.
But in a lot of circumstances, wouldn't you want, especially at quarterback, wouldn't you want more experienced players?
But Ross, in the unlikely event we hit the lottery and it's Patrick Mahomes, we want him for 20 years. That's what they're saying. They'd rather have this person for 15 years than 10.
Here's a total BS quote. It's sometimes really hard not to swear on this show. DaCosta says that he sees, I'm reading from Pro Football Talk. DaCosta says he sees more older players who have less room for growth. Ross, they have less room for growth in the NFL. Less room for growth. What is that? Can anybody? I'm waiting. Somebody. I know at least one NFL GM that listens to this
show. People who say we don't have time to teach him when they don't know how to take a snap from under center. What growth are you even worried about?
There's a great Mike Tomlin quote about that, Andy, and there's such a failure at the NFL level, not the collegiate level, to actually instruct. And Tomlin always says, like he said, it always amazes me how many coaches run from coaching, meaning like how many coaches won't embrace the actual part where you have to teach and be a teacher and look at the teachability of the raw talent. And yeah, the NFL, man, it's the entitlement.
Tomlin also had my favorite quote, and I wish I could remember what player he was talking to. He's at the combine. He sees a player who's going to be a very high pick. And he's like, nice to meet you. You're a top five pick. We're never going to be bad enough to draft you.
That's such a flex. And yet he kept winning by taking third and fourth round guys and winning championships with them. We talk about entitlement. We talk about people who don't really understand the forest for the trees in college football. This is the week that reminds me the NFL's entitlement and sort of their lack of the real world vision kind of blows away college. It's very, very different.
Yeah. They think the world should revolve around them. And in the most of the ways it does revolve around them, but there's also this multi-billion dollar industry beneath it that provides the players for them. And everybody's trying to keep their jobs in that industry. So, and now you have players keeping their own jobs and players getting paid allows Dante Moore to go, you know what? I really don't want to be a New York Jet. So I'm going to do everything within my power to not be a New York Jet.
Andy, you remember for years, at the birth of the social media era, the joke was always, could Nick Saban's Alabama beat the Jags? We have a sort of meta replication of that now where top tier first round talent can say, would I rather be an Oregon Duck or New York Jet for 1 year? Yeah. Dante Moore,
this is a great question because I think 100% of the respondents would want rather be an Oregon Duck for a year.
Exactly. But think about all those quarterbacks that we just rattled off all of them. Arch, Drew Mestemaker, Oklahoma State. Yeah. Who knows who's going to pop
this year,
right?
I didn't even mention Drew Mestemaker. Golly. Yeah.
I mean, think of the transfer guys. Byron Brown that's coming from USF over to Auburn. He could explode. Like, think about all these guys. How many of them are just like, God, I hope the Jets make the playoffs. God, I hope the Jets can the Jets just win nine games.
If Byron Brown has a big year, and he might, if he puts up numbers similar to what he put up at USF, throwing and running, the discourse on Byron Brown from January until April of next year is going to be spectacular because you've seen video of Byron Brown, right?
Yes.
His throwing motion begins around his waist.
Correct.
The NFL people's heads will explode. It'll be incredible.
This will be a classic example, Andy. We could do a deep and healthy Remember Some Guys segment right now of it worked in the NFL or worked in college. I was successful in college. My team won games, but it wasn't the NFL style of whatever it needed to be, right? And this is a classic example of, you know, Tebow's the one that Tim Tebow jumps out the most when you talk about throwing motions and you talk about the disproportionate amount of attention. But yeah, it's really just like our version of a knuckleballer. And if it doesn't work in the NFL, that's okay. Like if that's Auburn wins nine if they go to the playoff this year, no one cares about his throwing motion.
No, absolutely not. Now, Arch is the one that is amazing to me. And the other thing about, they're like, there's another person in college football just sort of hovering over everything that I find really interesting. Because unless somebody has just an unbelievable year at quarterback, there's still a more sure thing draft prospect out there. And that's Jeremiah Smith. Like, whoever doesn't take Jeremiah Smith, you run the risk of being the Blazers drafting Sam Bowie.
Mm. Wow. That's a painful cut. If we go into a 27 draft where it's not a position, same position referendum, then I think you may have an all-timer because this is going to prompt debates. You know, also think about the teams that are going to be drafting in that top, in that Smith range, Andy.
Yeah.
Is he the missing piece or do you have to go quarterback? Does he drop just by default? Like this gets into this gets into like the running back referendum that you talked about, or the tight end referendum, that, you know, like how high should you take a skill position player is not a quarterback kind of deal. Yeah, that would create the kind of NFL draft that NFL media loves. That's the stuff they'll do retrospectively.
They are dying for Arch Manning versus Jeremiah Smith.
Yes.
Dying for that.
Plus all those other quarterbacks we just named coming out of major institutions. Like, it's funny, like I know why you did it, where you rattled off those names and you had like, what if Notre Dame is coming off a national championship? Do you know how many casual football fans in America?
Notre Dame has the best odds to win the national title in the futures market right now. So why not?
So, but think about just in the court of public opinion, Andy, the overwhelming majority of casual football fans in this country who watch the NFL with some sort of pattern, right? Maybe they're a fan, maybe they just watch on Sundays, and their awareness, the Q rating of Notre Dame. And that, you know, most of them live in states that aren't the places we're from, but Notre Dame is still a dominant national brand. The default setting to saying CJ Carr should be the number one pick in the NFL draft because he won a national championship for Notre Dame. I hate this phrase of the attention economy. 27 is shaping up to be an NFL draft bigger than any, maybe any than I can remember.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, CJ Carr is not Riley Leonard or Ian Book.
No,
CJ Carr looks the part.
Yes.
Like, he has the skill set that the NFL wants. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not a stopgap. He was developed by the staff. He's going to come out as a product of a Marcus Freeman development system at Notre Dame.
Mike Denbrock's the OC. He coached Jaden Daniels at LSU, blah, blah. Yeah, all of it. All of it. So you have that. And Arch Manning, here's the fun part of all of this. CJ Carr, Arch Manning, Julian Sain. None of them have to go to the NFL after this season.
No.
Not a single one of them.
I have a question. If Arch Manning is not the number one overall pick, or sorry, not the number one quarterback taken, let's just say. Maybe he's number two and some team does take Smith, okay? If Arch Manning is not the number one quarterback taken in next year's draft, and he's not coming back to Texas, does Steve Sarkisian have a job? Is there any universe in which Arch is not considered to be minted,
you mean,
sort of knighted?
Do
knighted
they treat Arch the way they treated Quinn Ewers?
If we have a situation where Arch doesn't realize, you know, the destiny that's been placed at his feet with his last name, the expectations, Texas in general, right? All of it. Uh-huh. Is Steve Sarkisian working? Is Steve, I mean, is he the head coach of Texas?
I mean, I don't is think he working is. In the NFL? What's your hypothesizing is, no, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they push Arch out the way they pushed Quinn Ewers out for Arch.
No, I'm not talking about that, Annie. I'm saying if we're not in a situation. So, all right, let me back my logic up a second. The expectation at Texas is that you have to be at least the Final Four team or it's a failure.
Yes, correct.
Okay. If you are a Final Four team, chances are Arch is coming out, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
4 years in college, that's plenty. Yep.
Right. Therefore, if he's not the number one quarterback taken, I think there's a situation in which Texas has maybe the highest expectations of any program entering the season, higher than Notre Dame, higher than Ohio State, higher than anyone else, because of the weight of the crown that is Manning and what, like, you know, all these horrible journalists like Ross Dellinger, who wrote all those profiles and hyped him up. I mean, you remember when the media did all this last offseason, right?
It's our fault. Damn it.
Yeah, we did this. But it's also them going out and getting Cam Coleman. There's a lot of parts to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, their roster is arguably the most expensive in college sports, or right up there with the most.
Yeah. It's honestly, it's because I'm a little bit evil and I've been sitting here this week and we keep talking about Drew Aller. And I think, is Penn State an outlier or is Penn State an emerging market trend? Talking about 2025 Penn State. Like, is somebody correct going all in for a national title expectation? Are we always going to have one of these guys that just totally
crash
and burns?
This is a great question. One thing I will point out, though, the difference between Texas right now and Penn State last year. Texas has been going all in, or whatever the version of all in is, per year since NIL began. They have been trying to play that game since it began. Penn State was not. Penn State's NIL budget for 2024, when they made the semifinals, their roster cost $7 million. It was significantly more last year for the one that got everybody fired.
Oh, God. Yes. Like probably three times.
But when you go from not doing it to doing it, it's a very different world. Everything changes. Like Texas, nothing changed for Texas this offseason.
I don't know if that shifts the paradigm on Sarkisian, though. I think the expectation is like, if anything, they're gonna spend one more big dollar cycle supplying Sarkisian with what he should have in order to get to the national championship game. So I think,
by the way, Andy, you mentioned next year, you're talking about next year's draft and all the big names and how this year's sort of quiet and maybe next year will be explosive. And you mentioned that all these guys don't actually have to come out, especially with this new eligibility rule that's going to be instituted in August. You would expect guys will get that extra fifth season. Mm-hmm. So now they can stay for like two more years if they want.
Yes.
I mean, Arch didn't redshirt, right? I'm trying to think of when Arch rolled, actually.
Arch did redshirt, but yeah.
He did? Okay.
Yeah. But it's so
his
same,
third
it's sort of
year.
Oh,
this might be his fourth year. So yeah.
This is his fourth year in college.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But he, either way, he could play in college in 27 if he wants to.
Yeah. Jeremiah could play two more years, right?
He could. If that rule passes, which we expect it to, Jeremiah Smith could be in college into
maybe
you know,
Ohio
the
State will pay him
no.
at that point.
Stop,
maybe
Ross,
the cap will be $100 million. Ohio State will pay him like $20 million.
Ross, you're killing me because you are opening up the scenario. You're opening up the scenario in which every half-witted NFL wonk in a northeastern radio market is screaming about how college football is ruining the NFL. If Smith and or Manning are coming off of like Heisman caliber seasons next year and elect to come back to college, we are never. I'm going to just burn my TV. Like
Jeremiah Smith should be in Jet right now, and he's still in Columbus, Ohio, for two more years.
Do you realize how bad? First Take is already the nadir of media in America. But do you realize how much worse it's going to be if this happens?
I was doing my WFAN impression. We're going to get Stephen A. on this now too.
Yeah. All of it, just all of it. Yeah. Like this is, oh God, no, this is terrible.
Arch Manning's gonna spend another year in Austin.
Our
what world is this? Why doesn't he want to go to Cleveland and be a Brown?
For someone who grew up in Florida, I feel like your New York accent should be a little sharper. I'm just gonna throw that out there. It's just creative.
You do understand my original accent was Columbia, South Carolina, and I talk like this. So
I know
it's a big leap to. Sounding
Brother,
like
there's a,
you
there's
grew
a
up
lot
in,
of Long Island,
Bed-Stuy. So
there's a lot of Long Island in the Sunshine State. Okay, it's called tax evasion. So our producer TJ provides a very good question. Then we got to get out of the segment. Will the Mannings control where Arch goes, like they did with Eli? So I covered all that. I was stringing nationally for newspapers when that happened because Eli and I were the same age at Ole Miss, and it bears some scrutiny. I'll be very interested to see how involved the family will be.
Is Eli Manning the last person who was given the choice between living in San Diego and living in New York? I was like, no, I'll just take New York.
No, just go to New York. Yeah.
Man, I ripped that family
out.
So hard.
It did.
It did. I ripped that family so hard for the entitlement they displayed and their ability to manipulate the draft, whereas other athletes did not have it. And I stand by that.
Entitlement and schmeidelment. You can be rich in San Diego. Why would you ever turn that down?
Look, I agree with you. I agree with you totally, but it's funny now, like, I look back and I'm like, God, the Mannings are manipulating the draft process. It's typical Manning behavior of being above it all and elite. And then, like, as a parent, now I think, like, if I knew my kid was walking into a doomed professional situation, which I don't know if the Chargers were doomed in the 2000s, but I do believe that the Manning family had the access and ability to evaluate the Spanos ownership group in San Diego.
They definitely sent them to a better group of owners in front office.
Correct.
For sure.
Yes. Yes, and the Giants during that time were among the NFL's, if not best, most consistent and sort of buttoned-up organizations. And look, the dude won two Super Bowls, so what do I know?
We shall see. But yes, next year, I predict this will be a much spicier conversation for 4 months for all of the reasons because these quarterbacks, some of these quarterbacks are going to hit, whether it's CJ, Arch, Sayan, Mayava, Mestemaker, Sellers, Levitt. I could keep going. Sorsby, Hoover, Jaden Craig from Harvard starting at TCU now.
Arch, Manning, Atlanta, Falcon, Die Mad, New Orleans.
He had
to. Baby. Let's go.
When we come back, Greg Sankey has experienced a dramatic shift in the room around him. Ross Dellinger spent the last 2 days in Dallas. We'll talk about the CFP meetings and why everything feels like it's changed, but the central conflict remains the same. Talk about when we come back. We are back, College Football Inquirer, and Ross Dellinger spent the last 2 days in lovely Irving, Texas, where commissioners were hashing out more college football playoff stuff, not just changing a logo, adding a gradient, spending six figures, but talking about format, talking about how this is going to look in a few years. Nothing was decided, Ross, but it feels like stuff is happening.
Yes. And also, before we get jump into this, I wanted to, in an ode to our former host, Dan Wetzel, who loved to be critical of the powers that be and where they met specifically. This meeting was at the Ritz-Carlton Las Colinas. He would love that, I'm sure, to know that. So it was very fancy. Beautiful setting. Was there for 2 days. Ate at the lobby restaurant all six of my meals while there. At least the food was good. And yes, there was actually things happening that were noteworthy. And I think if you go back, Andy, 3 months ago, you had almost everybody in the room except for one person, Tony Petitti, on board with approving a 16-team college football playoff format. 3 months later, you have at least most, if not all, and certainly all of the people with key decisions on the power conference level, except one person, right, on board with the 2014 playoff suddenly. And of course, that person who's not is Greg Sankey. So we have a switch that's going on, and the pressure now moves from Tony Petitti in 16 to Greg Sankey in 24. And to Greg Sankey's credit, he was really the only power conference commissioner to sort of stop and spend several minutes with the media talking through a lot of issues. He didn't answer a lot of questions, but he did stop and chatted with us for an extended period of time. And basically, he made it clear that he's still on board with the 16-team playoff, and he went through all the issues that he finds in a 2014 format, which are, number one, just extending the playoff, just doubling it so quickly. Number two, the devaluing of the regular season. And then perhaps most important, which we should certainly dive into, are the financials and the loss of his $80 to $100 million annual conference championship game.
Ross, nothing happened. That's what the internet told me last night. Nothing happened at all. And I would say on the show, right, my sort of role is to jump in and say, this is all nonsense. They're meeting to meet. This is some other level of the executive dysfunction in college football.
That's not what's going on.
curveball. I think a lot is happening. Based on your reporting and based off of what I can see and having some experience doing this, nothing happened and there was no announcement made. And if we had to play the 2027 college football playoff right now, it would still be the same format as the one that we're about to and the one that we just did. Except I cannot recall a time in which the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference has been positioned as essentially the dissenting voice, the minority voice in a room full of executive level decision makers. That alone, to me, yes, nothing happened. But that alone paints a picture for the next, 3 to 6 months of these type of meetings and the leaks that you'll get and the reporting that you will do that really shifts the balance of power in a way that I give Greg Sankey a lot of hell for being kind of born on third in an executive status. But we're about to see what this guy can do. If he's going to stick to, if he's going to kind of die on the 16-team hill, he's got a lot of work to do, Ross. This is a seismic change.
Yeah, this is a great point that it doesn't just extend It extends out from the CFP historically with Greg Sankey, right? For the better part of, you know, 15 to 20 years, Greg Sankey has been a part of plenty of really key NCAA governance committees where usually he was the authoritative sort of voice in the room, even before he became SEC commissioner, when he was deputy commissioner. He was the voice in the room of reason, understanding, historical knowledge, and everybody sort of like coalesced around him. And so it's a great point that just in general, we kind of haven't seen him be off on an island. And it's becoming pretty clear here that he's off on an island. And we knew that last week, right? We talked about the presidential committee that met and Pete Bavakwa, Notre Dame's athletic director, and Brett Yormark of the Big 12 and Jim Phillips of the ACC. And of course, Tony Petitti, the Big 10, all voiced their support on that presidential call last week for 24 suddenly. And the same thing, I think similar things happened in the room in Dallas, right? The conversation from the presidential committee last week carried over to that room where most in the room were in support of 24. Now, there's somebody else or another group of people that aren't necessarily in support of 24 that's in that room that's not a decision maker. And that's the media consultants that the that the CFP uses. The CFP media consultants, I gave sort of a presentation to the CFP decision makers. And let's just say the presentation didn't shine a good light on a 2014 playoff. And for a few reasons. Number one, it devalues the regular season product. Number two, it negatively impacts a renegotiation of the CFP whenever that happens in four or 5 years or so. And then number three, and lastly, are you really going to expand a CFP double the playoff and only make 15, 20% more overall in revenue? Because those are the estimates. It's only going to be an additional $200-$400 million.
Yeah, because as the games get more, as you have a larger number of games, the number that they're worth diminishes pretty quickly. And now, my thing has been throughout this, if you want to go to 24 at some point, I'll listen to your reasons. But you don't even know what you're going to be organized like in 2033. What if you are suddenly a 48-team entity with a 24-team playoff? That looks kind of stupid. What if you're a 67-team entity with a 2014 playoff? Why not just let this ride until you decide what you actually look like? And the answer, Ross, I would imagine you're going to give me is they won't admit that they're going to reorganize, even though we all know they are.
I don't think they can right now. That would be
no, they can't. But we know they collusion. Are.
Yeah, that would be collusion if they even acknowledged in any sort of like secondary way in a public statement or an interview with someone like Ross.
I don't think they should make any decisions on this until we know, is college sports going to be added to the Sports Broadcasting Act? That's a pretty important point.
So hang on. And Ross, you should probably be the one to answer this. If, Andy, you bring up a good point. If we know that the ground underneath us is shifting pretty dramatically by 33, but we know that this is also taking place in a sort of short-sighted manner, what that would tell me is that every power broker in that room is not 100% on board. If it is collusion, they would shut up right now. They wouldn't be talking about a 24-team immediate playoff expansion. So it is collusion, I believe. It just may not be collusion shared amongst every person that's in that CFP decision-making matrix right now.
Well, right, and the reason I said the central conflict remains the same is the Big Ten and the SEC wrested power away from everybody else.
Right.
So as long as the Big Ten and SEC remain polar opposites, they're at a stalemate. And that's what's interesting here is, you know, you've got the Jon Snow meme from the Battle of the Bastards, where it's one guy and the oncoming army is rushing at him. And it was Tony Petitti 3 months ago. That was Tony Petitti.
Yeah.
All the other commissioners were like looking at him like, hey, let's get this done. Now,
Ross,
3 months later, it's Greg Sankey.
Something that was buried in Ross's reporting. Not buried, but in like you did it wrong. I mean, like something that
was I buried the lead.
No, you didn't bury the lead. But I do think there's a canary in there. I think there's a canary in there, Ross, which is that you included the figures of the disproportionate value of the SEC championship. Okay, and I know what Kirby Smart said, and I know what, we kind of feel from Alabama and Greg Byrne. We know the days are numbered on the concept of a conference championship standalone weekend. We've talked about all this. But the disproportionate value is really, really interesting to me.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking because in between this show and the previous show, we saw the broadcast rights for the 2026 Big Ten Championship revert back to Fox. I'm going to try and skip ahead so we don't bog the segment down. They held the rights. NBC purchased them. NBC is having some cash flow problems. You can go look at Peacock. You can just sort of Google Peacock revenue right now. And if you want to go down that rabbit hole, there's a great Hollywood Reporter article. They're bleeding, and they spent a lot of money in the Olympics that they didn't realize in revenue. So this is what I'm getting at. Last year, one of the most watched television shows in college football or live pieces of programming was Indiana-Ohio State, right? Mm-hmm. The SEC championship, Andy, is worth about $100 million, we think. The reason why is that they're really big, recognizable, shiny helmets. In the case of the Big Ten championship last year, I believe it was 1-2. Is that right? Or 1-3?
It was. It was 18 million viewers. It was the highest rated game.
Okay. Guy who grew up on Georgia Southern football, G5 advocate. This is me speaking. What kind of casual star power or a casually attractive star power could we install in a play-in first round that would match that? To go back to those TV analysts for a second, I don't know if, and I will watch the hell out of Akron and Central Michigan on a Tuesday, but I'm not normal. I don't know if seed 22 versus seed 19 is going to draw and make the network as much money as number one Ohio State versus number two Indiana or whatever it is. Sorry.
And the TV analysts, one of their arguments is they're doing it backward. They're treating the postseason and the regular season as two separate television products, and they shouldn't be.
Yes,
nobody else
that
does
is very
that.
True.
Yes. Now they can't. Now part of this is they can't do it any other way because of the SBA. They're not in it. They don't have antitrust protection. They cannot collude. Yeah. To sell the regular season. That may change.
If you look at what the matchups would have been last year, you know, they're in the first round. As far as first round matchups, you're adding 12 games, right? This 2014 playoff adds 12 games. It adds 8 first round games played among seeds 9 through 24. And then it adds 4 second round games. If you look at the first round games, there are some that are attractive, right? We talked about it, I think, a little bit last pod. Like Iowa, even though it's lost 4 games, it would have gotten in as the last team, number 24.
Yeah, Iowa, Miami.
And it would have played at Miami.
Yeah.
But like then you look at some other, Houston would have played at BYU, a rematch of a 3-loss team and a team that just lost in the Big 12 championship game. Tulane at Texas, Virginia at Vanderbilt. And then you have,
one.
You know, Michigan at Utah. That
would have been great.
Some eyeballs. Yeah, so here we go. So if you talk to TV experts, it's anywhere from $10 million for one of those games, to $20 to $25 million. In the middle around that, it's going to be $18 to $20 million for every first round game and probably the additional 4 round, second round games too. And so you're looking at barely recuperating the money that you lose in all of the conference championship games combined. There was a number set in the room yesterday, $250 million. That's all of the 10 FBS conference championship games.
That's not worth it if you get to that point. Even a scintilla of damage to the regular season relevance. If you do even any damage at all, it's not worth it.
You have to, as one of the commissioners told me, you can't just make up the conference championship game loss, $250 million. It's got to be well more than that.
Yeah. You need to be incentivized.
$450, $500, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and you really don't know what, you know, the amount, the valuation is going to be until you go to the market. And keep in mind, the NFL
is going to go to the market early. They're going to take cash out of the system. Godfrey just mentioned the Peacock stuff because several people there were like, oh, what about the streamers? You know, they could come in like an Apple, Amazon, but you can't really count on that. And the CFP Guys. Thought that would happen 2 years ago, and it didn't.
As someone
who... The CFP, what the colleges need is the streamers to jump in hard on the NFL or Google to buy a bunch of games for YouTube for the NFL, which is not the same thing. But for the college's purposes, is the same thing. Like, they need the broadcast networks to be desperate for premium content.
There is an assumption of an ever-expanding platform for football in America because of the expansion of streamers, traditional broadcast networks, et cetera. I'm kind of raising the red flag here. If you're an industry person, we're not seeing expansion right now. We're seeing consolidation. Paramount just bought Warners. Netflix is cost cutting. We are seeing the problem with streamers right now is that their business model is not realizing what they pitched us, not us, the consumers, us as the industry back in 2019. And they're not in a position, Andy. I really am a little worried here if people think like, oh, there's just gonna be so many places to sell college football to. Apple has been extremely choosy and taking very supplier side friendly deals in live sports broadcasting. They took a flyer on the MLS.
It's Netflix, Amazon, Google, and what are they going to do? And this is another reason why I keep saying you don't have to do this now.
Yeah.
You could wait until the NFL does its deals.
That's what Sankey and I think many of his presidents, and I did hear, by the way, I didn't write about it, but I did hear from a few SEC presidents after all this yesterday, and they're in support of their commissioner, right? They want to stay at 12 or go to 16. They don't want to expand. And one of them had a good point, which has been brought up by several commissioners too in the room, is why are we doing this so quickly? Why are we doubling a field? This should be a gradual step in the process. Go to 16, then go to 24. Now, there's another side of that argument too is, well, if you're going to get to 24, go to 24 immediately. What are you doing? Why are you waiting?
Right. Well,
so
you know what?
I don't know.
You doing 18 plus 16 plus 1 is? It's 35.
I don't do math.
Okay. Do you know what 18 is? That's the membership of the Big Ten, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to continue on 16.
Yeah.
SEC. One
SEC,
is Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
If we're talking about the Super League in its simplest incarnation, and I'm not saying that's how it's going to look exactly, right? I'm not saying that, like, you know, TCU's out and South Carolina's in. Please don't at me. But if you just take it on its face value right now, a 35-team Super League and a 24-team playoff is a bad television product.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Back to the finances, guys, and you could weigh on your, maybe everybody give their opinion on this. If you got to get to $250 million just to break even because you're getting ready for the championship games, how much more money would you need to make it worth it to do all this? I mean, obviously, there's a positive.
Can I give
access,
you an idea that would probably get you some more money? We talked about what garbage week one is this year.
Mm.
What if you had really good non-conference matchups in week one? Would that be worth more money to television? Yes, it would.
Well, Mr. Tony Petitti says that this 2014 playoff, and Fox says this too, will create these better non-conference matchups early in the season because teams will schedule them more.
But you know what would also create that? The playoff committee actually parsing the records with a critical eye.
Kick that ass.
Just looking at the loss column.
Well, so, you know, funny you mentioned that, Andy. So this spring, I believe the College Football Playoff Executive Director, Rich Clark, and a couple of his senior leadership members will be going around to a couple of spring meetings, namely the SEC, in doing a presentation that revolves around what you just said. What's the situation with the selection committee? What are they looking at? How does this work? How can you improve on selecting teams?
Is this the coaches' meeting in Destin?
Yes.
This is.
I'm sure they'd be met with a lot of, oh my God.
I don't know if
it's
going to be the
faces
full in Destin.
Coaches, presidents, ADs, if it's just going to be coaches, ADs, but I think it is going to involve presidents at some point. So it might be just the presidents and ADs. God, I'm not sure.
Ross, if the playoff executives presented their logic to in the coaches' meeting room, which is a very famous thing that we all know about, I would pay $5,000 of my own money to sit in that room and say nothing. I won't even take notes. I will commit it. It will burn into my, it will sear into my cortex. That would be the Ross knows why I'm hyping this up. The response in the room amongst SEC head coaches to the work product of recent of the College Football Playoff Committee would be better reality television than anything you can offer me on a Love Island. It would be absolutely amazing.
It would be spectacular.
Oh, man. Oh, God.
Yeah. So
sorry,
I'm
dwelling on this. This would be, God, this is the TV show you need, guys. This is the shoulder content that ESPN needs, man. Turn the cameras on that.
Well, this is going to be, the fact that CFP will be there presenting just makes it all the more likely that SEC spring meetings this year, along with all the other crazy NIL, CSC, right, stuff going on in college athletics, the compensation stuff, that the College Football Playoff in its future will again take center stage. And I think we'll hear a lot of coaches and ADs and perhaps even presidents start to come out publicly more in support of something other than 16. It'll be interesting if they even publicly push back, especially the coaches and ADs, against their own commissioner.
I have one last question, Ross. Was there any discussion about that godforsaken Tuesday night show?
No. Sankey said there was hardly no talk about it at all. Rich Clark did say they spent a little time on it. I think it's going to be an ongoing conversation. But guys, I'm just here to tell you, ESPN's not going to drastically change the show.
Yeah.
It's a contractual issue.
We did a segment on my On3 show about this, and we figured it out. Rank the teams less stupidly, and you won't have a problem.
Andy, I have an Ari story. He was there at CFP meetings, and yes. I love that guy. He's great. I mean, he just cracks me up. And so we're in this lobby area, right? And all these big events are going on. People are holding conferences. It's not just college football playoff, right? It's like Pinnacle something is having a conference. Edward Jones is there. Hundreds of people, and they're in and out, and there's food displayed everywhere, like for them. No. Yeah, you know what's coming. For them, right? Not for us, and not even for the college football playoff people, like commissioners. This is food for like Edward Jones, but the food looks really good. I mean, the food looks spectacular, and it's all lined up. And I mean, there's a pasta station, a guy's out there cooking like pasta. Well, Ari comes in, and he's like, oh, I hadn't had lunch. This looks really good. And he asked me, he said, can I eat some of this? And I said,
I think he asked Ross for permission.
Yeah. I was like, the first thing I said was no, but then later I'm like, damn, I missed an opportunity. So I kind of went back and was like, you should have some of it. Well, he got up and he started to grab a plate, and the server came out of nowhere, darting toward him and said, no, no, no. That's
the hotel
for people
cops
in the room. It was great.
They could smell the poor media on y'all, and they were like, absolutely not. Investment bankers.
Well, she came out of nowhere. We go from one person trying to get in that room to another person trying to get into an exclusive club. When we come back, Lincoln Riley says the championship window is open at USC.
Was it nailed shut?
Great. We'll talk about it when we come back. Welcome back to College Football Inquirer. My new On3 colleague, Wilson Alexander, talked to Lincoln Riley the other day and wrote a story. And let me just read you the headline. Lincoln Riley believes USC has now entered its championship window. And let me read you a quote. USC had to get really serious about being great in the sport again, Riley said. I give the school administration, everybody, credit. They have. Wait, one more quote. Taking this over, you knew you had to fight like hell just to try to get this window open. And we're at the point right now where there's a lot to be excited about and a lot in front of us. It's been a lot of work for a lot of people, a lot of commitment from a lot of people to get there. And it should be a lot of fun these next few years. Stephen Godfrey, for the people in podcast form who aren't watching on yahoosports.tv, which you should be.
He's doing the facepalm emoji.
No, yeah, I'm not laughing
under his breath.
I can't make it through this. I'm sorry. Hey.
Go ahead.
Do they have televisions in Los Angeles? Did this dumbass
they have the
not
beach?
Just
I mean,
watch...
everybody just goes to the beach, so I don't know if they watch TV.
Hey, did this dumbass Okie not just watch Indiana win a national title in 2 years? Can we start there?
I did think it was funny because Wilson's story came out on Tuesday, and we had Kurt Cignetti on my On3 show on Wednesday.
I know, I saw it. Yeah,
it was very hard to not act because, like, he's not going to say anything about someone else in the conference saying something like that. But I did ask him. I'm like, do coaches get mad at you for destroying all of their stupid excuses?
This is I would say USC is in the top five of sort of like psychologically affected by the Indiana, what do we call it? Happening. Lincoln Riley, especially. I spent the last coaching cycle really fixating on DeAnton Lynn going to Penn State. And I think on this show, Andy, you didn't talk me off, but it was more like, well, look, it's alma mater. There's been a sea change in Penn State. He sees an opportunity.
Also, the Gary Patterson hire to replace him ain't bad. I'm good with that.
Right. But it's not that. It's that there's a perpetual feeling of a failure to launch with Lincoln Riley's USC. And that was just sort of the latest in a chapter, I feel like. That's one thing. Programs struggle for myriad reasons. There are unforeseen factors that affect the development trajectory, the portal, blah, blah, blah. We've done all this. You don't have to go in the media and say stupid stuff like this. Like, God bless. Was it you said Wilson did it? Wilson, yep. He just came from the Advocate, right? Your old job, Ross, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, like, he's reporter.
He's trying to be on that Ross Dellinger.
Yeah, he's on that. Yeah, trajectory. Yeah. Kids, if you want to succeed in college football journalism, you have to move to Baton Rouge. That's
you have to cover LSU because you'll learn everything you need to know
about systems, yeah, systems malfunctions, yeah. and institutional corruption. So, no one, the entirety of Lincoln Riley's time in Los Angeles, from the moment he got there, when he was doing the Graham Bessinger show and talking about people breaking into his home in Oklahoma after he took the USC job, this man has committed more unforced errors in the media than any other major sitting head coach that I can think of. And if someone yells Lane has that sort of Trumpian ability to sort of spin truth. And Lincoln is so much more credulous when he makes these statements. He really believes what he told
Wilson. Lane will turn around and be entertaining. Yes. About it, and you'll forget.
No, Lincoln operates with a perpetual chapped ass. That's the problem, is that he's so dour and serious about this in a market that is basically just tapping their watch and saying, hey, you haven't delivered yet. The LA market and Lincoln Riley is like peanut butter and broken glass. It has been an awful relationship to watch. I deal with a lot of people in the entertainment world, and like a lot of them are USC grads. And they just don't care. It's a show me proposition at USC. It's not the easiest place in the world to win at. I think as time goes on, we realize that Pete Carroll achieved something, and there was a little bit of luck and a lot of timing involved in that run. But Lincoln Riley, from a personality standpoint and how you succeed in Los Angeles sports, it's anathema. And this is just he's also just set himself up to, when they don't win a championship this year, when they don't make it to the Final Four, when they don't make it to Indianapolis, he's in the process of chiseling his own epitaph.
I think, like, he's fine if doing the playoff, strategy? But if they don't make the playoff. And look, they're ducking Notre Dame. They got out of the Notre Dame series because the Big Ten schedule is hard this year. Like, their Big Ten schedule is tough.
Can you name six? Well, how many programs can you name in the Big Ten that might make the playoff above them? It's a list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and guys, and you guys know this, our listeners maybe not as much, but they are spending top three money,
yes,
probably,
yes,
in the country.
But a lot of it is on,
especially on their freshman recruiting
young
class.
Players. Yes, that,
yes,
and it's interesting because instead of going and getting the top of the line from the portal, they decided, let's get the number one recruiting class. Chad Bowden's their GM. He came from Notre Dame. Now, I don't think he's necessarily tied to Lincoln Riley. He's hired by Jen Cohen, their AD, who did not hire Lincoln Riley.
That's a good point, Andy.
So this might be a strategy for the future that may or may not involve Lincoln Riley. It's up to Lincoln Riley to decide whether he's going to be part of that future.
And I mean, they've given him everything they can. I remember this time last year, maybe, they announced a big new deal with the multimedia rights partner Learfield, which they were down the road with Playfly. And I know I don't want to get too boring here, but we all know how important MMRs are right now with money and paying players It's a huge storyline, and it's going to continue. And they struck a huge deal with Learfield where they got a huge chunk of money up front. And that wasn't coincidental on the timing of when the revenue share came to be. So I think there's a lot of redirect of money, and there's a lot of compensation to that roster and to that freshman class.
Yeah.
So pressure is on.
It's tough because in the Big Ten, when you have to play against Ohio State and you have to play against Oregon, like, you don't want to be reliant on freshmen. Now, they're not completely reliant on freshmen. They have a fourth-year quarterback who is, you know, in his third year as the starter. I think this may be his fifth year because I think he redshirted at UNLV, Jaden Maiava. Very good quarterback.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. So talent's not the problem.
They bring back the whole offensive line. Like, they're not – this is not a case of they're going to throw some 18-year-olds out there and pray. They have good older players, too. But – so does everybody else in the Big Ten at this point. And that's where you've got to figure this out, because they need to make the playoff. I think you talked about the show me proposition. They got to make the playoff. And so they open Big Ten play with Rutgers. Let me give you the rest of Big Ten play for them.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon and Washington, at Penn State, at Wisconsin, Ohio State, at Indiana, Maryland, at UCLA.
Well. The good news is that Rutgers might be a Spirit Halloween by the time they play them. So you talk about financial problems. This is one of the most interesting teams in college football this year, but it's not because I'm super excited to like watch the offense necessarily. It's just that like this is they may get the tight ass award going in. I'm gonna start creating Feldman.
Bruce Feldman, remember, awards. They're talking trash to Oregon now when they beat them in recruiting. They're talking trash to Notre Dame.
Good idea,
beat them
guys.
In
recruiting.
Yeah,
good idea, guys.
The Oregon thing, especially, like,
what are you doing?
They had a player commit to USC, you know, from Southern California. And Oregon has been dominating USC and Southern California recruiting for the past 5-6 years, and. You know, it's an image of the grass being painted cardinal, and it says the grass isn't always greener. I'm like,
no,
do not point don't
Dan
don't
Lanning
hit Dan Lanning with the pointy stick. That's not the guy you want to poke with the pointy stick.
Nope.
Dan Lanning and Oregon football are the Martin Scorsese of trash talking, like social media clips and hype videos. And like, dude, he's Jordan level petty about this stuff. And that's a compliment. They are going to savor every sec. Dude, why are you doing this?
Yeah, if anything, that's the thing.
We need to find out this year.
Will tell us everything. The Oregon game on September 26th will tell
the barometer.
Us.
That Oregon game is going to tell us a lot. It's going to tell us one thing, I think. Is this a Jimbo Fisher-sized mistake? And are you going to make a Jimbo Fisher-sized payment to fix it? And then third, just to kill our producer live on the air, are you going to then turn around and offer Dan Lanning the keys to Los Angeles?
He's not leaving. Uh-huh. He's not leaving. But you know what? You know who is? Us. We're going to go enjoy the NFL
I got the
draft.
USC job?
Oh, you did? Yeah.
All right.
Better make the playoff or you're fired. All right.
I'm going to drive around South Central in the middle of the night like Pete did. Hand out business cards.
Everybody enjoy the NFL draft. We'll be back on Tuesday. We'll have numbers. I am very curious. Is this the first time since 2004 that the SEC does not have the most players drafted? I still think the SEC will reign supreme for at least one more year, but we'll be counting it. On Saturday, Mike Vrabel might not be there, but we will. Talk to you on Tuesday.